Indeed you are, Daisy. Indeed you are. Well, Gabriella, it's time to go straight in without any messing about whatsoever, I feel, because it's what the citizens of Lincoln and arguably the world are waiting for on this November the 21st day of 2019.
Okay, a really dramatic entry to the weather for Lincoln. So today's weather is highs of 6 degrees centigrade, lows of 5 degrees centigrade, and it's a day of light cloud with a gentle breeze.
Live from Gibraltar, with or without her faithful friend Frodo, it's time for Gabriella Peralta on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition.
Quite right, too. Gabriella, we could talk immediately about uncovering what really happens when we sleep. I think you touched on this last week, if I recall, from the Gibraltar Literary Festival. And obviously we should really have our sleep expert, Stephanie Romashevsky, to actually join us. It's high time Steph came back. I must drop her an email. Where do you want... Or you could go straight in to say, Emily Boston, you're from the wonderful land of Essex. You know Fern McCann. What sort of things... Well, actually, she knows of Fern McCann. She followed the whole thing through. What's your experience and thoughts as an English student experiencing your first morning edition of the Midweek Drive after, say, last night's squad strength edition, where she had a whole range of folk there? It's up to you, Gabriella. You have the controls.
Well, I think it would be probably best if I ask Emily that big question you were asking, but basically, how have you been finding it?
Hi, Gabriella. Yeah, I really enjoyed it, actually. Last night, obviously, there was a big crowd of people. There was about six or seven of us in the studio. It's just me this morning, but I've kind of been thrown in the deep end. But no, I do really enjoy it, and I'm having a lot of fun, so...
Good, good. Yeah. You, what you'll find is maybe today some people will walk in late.
Yeah, fashionably.
Well, I used to do that.
Gabriella,
I would have probably missed my slot, the first slot in the morning, quite a lot when I was a student.
I'm sure, Gabriella, I seem to recall you being here, like relentless as like clockwork from that point of view. That's why we had to keep it going when you headed over there. Whoa. So
but I think as the weeks passed, By the last month, I was turning up about 20 minutes late each time because it was just so hard to get up.
Yeah, well, you know, if you sort of spend your time unconscious, you know, consider sleepwalking, which tells us about that sleeping edition. Let's go to the Giblet Festival, etc.
Yeah.
What was it all about? I mean, would you like to talk about that or imposter syndrome? I mean, there's so much here that you've been covering with the Gibraltar Literary Festival.
Yeah, it's been a really kind of diverse year, which I've enjoyed so much, and less talks than other years, but I felt like maybe because there's less, I've been able to enjoy more. Okay.
Every so often when you say less talks, clearly there's that sort of tendency to actually break into a guitar. I just thought I'd step away from it, really, basically. Carry on.
But the sleep expert, it was so good because he was just, he's done a book called The Nocturnal Brain, and it's describing all of his most extreme patients that he's seen over his career. So I think his most extreme one was the one who would do sleep driving. So she'd get up, still, you know, asleep, but put on her clothes, go get her motorbike or her car, have a ride, and then come back home, go back, change into her bed clothes and go into bed. So she used to wake up none the wiser that she was actually doing late night rides across town.
It's very dangerous.
Yeah, until her landlord told her, her landlady was like, "What are you doing? Getting up in the middle of the night and going for a drive." And she was like, "Oh, I don't do that." And she was like, "Yes, you do." So in the end, she sold her motorbike because she thought that was too dangerous, and then locked away her car keys. And that was her treatment. So sometimes the treatment's therapy, medicine, sometimes it's just locking away the keys.
Well, you know, you raise an interesting spectre there. How many people actually on the roads are actually conscious? Straight up there. Yeah, it's just going to be all strange sort of bits and pieces. It's the season of giving, apparently, Gabriella, with 8 in 10 British folk preferring to be the gift givers over the receivers. But agonies are being had by the notion of the way in which we would gift differently. I mean, I suggested earlier in the interview with Jez Rose in a not-too-distant future that, at the end of the day, what's wrong with socks? However, you know, that's a different line from that side of things. But I'm going to put a couple of these questions to yourself, Gabriella. What's the best gift you've ever given someone?
Oh, my God.
Yeah, that's one to sort of give consider. Apart from yourself, obviously, because clearly, you know.
Yeah. The best gift I've ever given someone.
That's a tricky question.
Yeah. Okay, I'll throw in another one then. Finish this sentence. I'm the world's unknown expert in... .. I'm the world's unknown expert in... It's not going well, is it, Gabriella?
How would I be an unknown expert?
Well, because you're the world's unknown expert.
I'm an expert,
exactly.
I'm not an expert.
You could say that you're the world's.
I could say kind of like Gibraltar facts and things like that, but everyone knows it because I write it every day.
That's very true.
Okay, imagine you have 24 hours to do anything you want. The sky's the limit. What would you do?
I had 24 hours to do anything I want. I would probably go somewhere really exotic, but then the flight would take too long.
And finally...
These are really hard questions. I can't think of... I'm so boring, I can't think of anything I would want to do in 24 hours.
Okay.
I'm like, maybe I'll go somewhere exotic, but by the time I get the flight there, it'll be like most of my 24 hours gone.
This Christmas, you decide to donate everything you own except 3 items. What do you keep?
What do I keep? Mm. Okay.
Again, not going that well. We'll work our way through
this. Probably my phone, because of the phone itself, just because it has so much stuff on it.
Okay, and finally, you can ruminate on these all day, and when you're unconscious, who knows? What's the one thing you could watch or read about forever and never get bored of? What's the one thing you could watch or read about forever and never get bored of? Yeah? Low boredom
pressure. I get bored of things so
exactly.
quickly.
Exactly.
I have that thing where that's why I've never had a tattoo or anything in my life.
No, you don't.
I'll get it and then 2 days later I won't like it.
Exactly.
But you
can get that removed, I believe.
God, I'm the type that just, you know, will watch something for a while and then I can't finish any TV series or anything because I'll watch a few episodes and I'll get bored of it. Or if it starts, you know, when people say, oh, you have to wait for it to get good, I just don't wait.
Gabriella, I'm the exact same, but the only thing that I can watch without ever getting bored of is the Polar Express every Christmas.
Every Christmas that comes on, and that's
one thing I'm never bored of.
Well, it's that kind of thing which just opens up a whole new world. Gabriella, have you had...
I haven't answered a single one of the questions.
You blank completely on that basis. You know, Jez Rose, if you're listening, it's a whole new world on that sort of system. Actually, she did this once last night, even though she went off on a slight tangent when she was over. So who knows? Maybe Emily will get it this morning. Emily, would you like to put those last two questions to Gabriella? The cliched ones, but the ones we use on the midweek drive.
Yes, I'll make sure I get it right this time. Gabriella, have you had a good telephonic link with us this morning?
I have, thank you.
That's great. And will you be joining us soon to talk more about news from Gibraltar?
Hopefully next week.
Great, thank you very much.
On a good ship adventure, a whaling men are we. We set sail for the Cape Horn where the seas as cold as ice. The wind will bite through ya like a 1,000 starving mice. Our ship is made of solid wood, but our men are made of steel. One step out of line, you'll be all beneath the keel. Go down, you blood red rose. Go down, you prince of bones. Go down, you blood red rose.
yes, you are a mountain of a man. The rest of us are sorry dogs, misfits of the land. And there's something in the air tonight, the men, they cannot sleep. Are they dreaming of a watery grave on the coast of Moby Dick? We'll be home before the new year, with stories to be told, with a shipload of whale oil and a pocket full of gold. Go down, you black man. She blows, a monster of the deep. Lower the boats away, me lad, she must be 60 feet. Steady, boys, now hold your nerve, she's a killer of a whale. She could sink a ship with just one flick of her mighty, mighty tail. Go down, you black man, go. Go down, you pencil nose. Go down, you black man, go.
Of course, I would say that actually if Felicity Jones had actually replaced Christian Bale in Lamar, it would have been a much, much, much better movie and probably reached the quality of The Aeronauts. But maybe that's just my little thought, Richard. I mean, I don't know why I sort of raised that in any way.
I did mention that Marriage Story was the one that we...
I know you did. I know you did.
But we have very big... we really have... I mean, we have three films, if you want to discuss them all.
Listen. We hadn't expected before that we would have actually...
We use a certain amount of news, you know, on the Royal Front. I just thought I'd mention
Shameless plug, Richard, for the notion that actually the BBC's series on H.G. Wells' War of the Worlds actually featured the Martians landing and destroying Woking. And that was all Prince Andrew was trying to do. He was simply trying to actually address the notion that people were needing to be woke to Woking. That's the clear routine. And why he hasn't said that, I just don't know. Other than that, Kira Olsbrook, you're a PR undergraduate. Would you say it was a disaster?
Yeah, I would, to be fair. Yeah. I think they need... The crisis management needs to be on the board
right.
at the moment.
Okay. Emily, you're not a PR student. You're an English student. But would you say the Prince Andrew interview was a PR disaster?
Yes. I actually watched the whole thing and would definitely agree. It was extremely controversial, and I think a lot of it was quite problematic. So. Ooh.
Well, there we are, Richard. That's the views of the undergraduates today. And you, car crash of an interview? Do you feel as though, you know, by this, the toe-sucking days of Fergie and that Texas businessman just pale into comparison?
Well, I mean, one of the advantages of what's just happened, and I mean, it's his decision, but it was after consultations with the Queen and undoubtedly with the Prince of Wales, i.e. if he hadn't so decided, he would have been pushed there. I mean, there's no question about it. I mean, this was a catastrophe of Krakatoan proportions. If you actually looked, and I've seen it twice, I mean, it's painful to watch any of it again. Not to mention the first time I was actually doing a piece for Channel 7.
Richard, we see from a recent line that you put on the wonderful social media 7 hours ago, you're doing pieces for LBC, BBC Wales, LBC, London News, News Talk, Talk Radio, Magic FM, New Zealand, and you managed to get the wonderful blue plaque, which actually demonstrates that Prince Andrew visited
Indeed.
Here 10th of March 2001, Pizza Express, Woking.
Indeed, a very, very important point that you've just made. But no, I mean, the thing was, firstly, it had become absolutely untenable because there are so many legal questions that need to be answered in the months to come. This would have been, I mean, you couldn't stretch this out any longer. The monarchy had become an issue in the general election campaign. You can't have that. Also, it had become a subject of some derision. You've got to have gravitas if you're a royal, and he'd lost it.
Do you not think, Richard, that he's simply applying what our current Prime Minister and indeed the President of the United States actually use as business as normal, that actually he was believing that when you get to a certain stage you can actually say anything?
I think that, firstly, the weird thing, I mean, this is just so extraordinary, Alex, that this interview, and it wasn't as though it had been decided on a few days before. They had been negotiating, apparently, for months. And you agree, therefore, when you're as stupid as he is, to take questions, when in Charles and Jonathan Dimbleby's interview in Diana and Panorama, they knew what the questions were going to be. Those were examples of what not to do, although Diana's was magnificent theatre, and we've had phrases added to the English language because of it. You know, Three in a Marriage was rather a bit crowded, and Queen of People's Hearts and so on. Charles's was an admission of adultery, which was totally counterproductive, and the other aspect of Charles's, of course, was Defender of Faith, as opposed to the title Defender of the Faith when he finally or eventually becomes king. I mean, this caused a lot of controversy too. But all of it pales before what we saw on Saturday.
I can tell, Richard, you're almost exasperated, and again, looking
at... not almost. I mean, I'm totally exasperated because, as I say, I did an interview during it. I'd had the transcript, and it really was almost impossible to believe that the fact that he didn't regret his friendship with Epstein, and that it cost him his job, and he was too stupid to realise that, and the sense that
the interview was going anywhere,
and what you also were getting, the more he was speaking, the more questions were being raised, and the fact also that you have, as I say, police inquiries, you also got the victims. He expressed no contrition whatsoever. It was
To be fair, Richard, the fact of the matter is...
It's not a matter of being fair. The fact of the matter is that the monarchy...
They're not often the brightest tools in the box. You know, that's the way the thing is with respect to monarchy. And you know, much as we love the institution and so on, you know, fundamentally, there are times where you think, this is not a good idea. Just a name check to ITV Scotland, Al Jazeera, Sunrise, CTV, LBC twice, Talk Radio three times, Radio New Zealand, BBC Wales, London, Oxford, Nottingham, Kent, Hereford and Worcester, three counties, Oxford, interviews to the Mail on Sunday, The Express, CNN Online, Business Insider, all this in front of a green screen, Richard. I'm very impressed. That's good. You know, as indeed one of the sort of focus actually said, do you ever get any time off? Your days are so busy. I admire your tenacity, and not to mention tireless energy. That's Maureen Lane
very
speaking.
Very kind, but in fact, the extraordinary thing was that on Saturday, the news was breaking, and we were getting clips from this interview, the fact that Faith is like letting the side down and kicking himself as well. And the fact it was perfectly obvious we were heading towards a train crash, especially since we know he was not bright, but people... I mean, they thought of Andrew, they thought of Sarah Ferguson, who I think we won't hear from again for a long time. Also, the Falklands, yes, he was a brave pilot, 22 years in the Navy, he was good at that. But we knew, most people knew very little else apart from Epstein and that link. Now they got to hear that, he didn't, when it came to asking him to a standard shooting party, part of the course. But as for going to Pizza Express in Woking, that's the sort of thing I do. Of course I remember. I mean, you can't talk down to people like that. And what's more, you're supposed to get the audience on your side. Mm. He hadn't an idea what was going to be asked. A couple of things off limits, it seems. Sarah Ferguson didn't get a mention by name, but Epstein had paid £15,000, apparently in late 2010, to help clear all these vast debts and had regretted it. That is a very, very important point, but it just shows, I mean, that Andrew and Sarah are identified with ostentation and greed. A royal family cannot afford that. It's not just a question of it being at a time of austerity. If the streets were paved with gold, the same rule would apply. You've got to have dignity. You've got to have gravitas. He couldn't appear anywhere, and I don't think he ever will. I mean, I think that what we will find, hopefully, the victims will be involved in this. There will be inquiries, questions, a matter whether or not he knew Epstein, apparently in the early 1990s, has just been raised because of a letter in the Times. I mean,
is it fair to say we're never likely to have that kind of prefix that was often used to refer to Prince Andrew as Randy Andy ever being used again to major effect within the media, unless it's in a deeply ironic sense?
Well, I mean, this was one of the most extraordinary things. The pages of Party Prince, and he actually stated on air that...
But he doesn't sweat. He doesn't sweat.
I can say this because, obviously, on legal subjects, we have to be restrained as to Virginia Roberts's allegations and so forth. Yeah. But I can say that the Party Prince, I mean to say he wasn't, was absolute rubbish. And regarding sweating, it does seem to be a very strange condition. People don't seem to know
of it. Never heard of it before, actually.
Isn't it extraordinary?
Unless David Icke was right all those years ago and actually he is descended from a reptile.
The corn circle.
Yes.
The sweating was linked to that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there have been photographs of him sweating, apparently, in years that he's supposed not to.
Or maybe glowing. But royals don't sweat. They glow.
But the extraordinary thing, you know, is that as all this was being broken down, answer by answer, it was getting worse and worse. It's amazing he stayed on as long as he did, but you have to remember, he thought it went well. He is that daft. Yeah. He is that stupid. He actually issued the, through our source, this comment that he'd, the honesty and
surely,
humility.
Richard, surely this is a case for Dominic Cummings to actually take the bull by the horns and really actually address his personal brand.
On the horns, he was impaled, literally impaled on horns that he had placed there. He did this to himself. And the royal family was, as I say, a subject of laughter. People weren't taking this seriously. And what's more, what we also had, and this reminded a lot of people, and it's very, very important to mention this, you have a lifestyle as ostentatious as he had with the amounts of money, how he got them, that is a matter for speculation. You know, you put your house in the market and it sells for $3 million more than you ask, all of this, that this was coming into the articles, in-depth articles. People were reading this and they were being appalled. And I mean, 6% approve of your interview. Now, that is a record. Now, you can't get much lower than that, you know.
Well, you could have negative. I mean, let's just because Emily, you've been listening to Richard there. It's just your second midweek drive, one evening slot, one morning slot. This royal edition with respect to Prince Andrew, as somebody from Essex, has it done the monarchy irreparable damage, do you think?
I think definitely. I watched the whole interview. So, I mean, it was about 45 minutes, I think, wasn't it, in the end? And just listening to some of the answers, a lot of it just didn't add up. A lot of it just didn't really make sense. And I think you could tell that he was kind of caught off guard quite a few times. And I do just think a lot of things that were said was problematic. So I definitely say that it's done a lot of damage. And I don't think a lot of people think good of him after that at all.
And Kira, to you.
Alex mentioned the word irreparable. Would you say that?
Yes, I would say that.
The monarchy can't recover at all. I do think it will recover. But I do think it's been very badly damaged because this is a crisis. But can you see, I mean, the Queen remains a symbol of a truly remarkable reign, don't you think?
Yes. The thing is, I love the royal family as well. I really like the Queen and I loved Princess Diana. I love watching documentaries and things like that on her. So I just think it's a massive shame, really, to be honest.
Because, Emily, you wouldn't have been even born when Princess
Diana thing, but my mum absolutely loved Princess Diana. Mm. And there's so many documentaries and things on her, and just watching her and hearing stories about her, I thought she was amazing. So, it is not good.
Kira?
Well, it's interesting to hear, you know, a lot you know, with what's happened. And the royal family is genuinely a family that should never be mocked. And, you know, Prince Andrew being part of that, he completely damages the reputation. And I think in terms of the public relation aspect, I think the best thing that the PR team for Prince Andrew have probably done is probably just make him step back from everything. Mm. But I think
partnering up with Meghan wouldn't be...
No, I mean, some other crisis will come up soon enough with him, so I don't think it's over.
But mind you, one of the problems, I mean, I think that Andrew will be playing a further part in royal life, apart from apparently appearance in Christmas at Sandringham outside the church, or going to St. James Church as they normally do on Christmas morning.
Praying for forgiveness, Richard, praying for forgiveness.
Well, no, but it is honestly too late for that, one has to say, because so many questions have been raised, this is going to go on for years. The other point one must make, you mentioned the Sussexes, now they have, they're taking a 6-week break because they are so unhappy with the pressures of being royal. Now, what you need, I mean, you need a root and branch reform when it comes to Buckingham Palace and the response to the sort of thing. I mean, the fact that it was done at all was so bewildering. And you also need to rein in senior members of the royal family, because otherwise, I mean, you had a terrific tour of South Africa, and at the end of it, the Duke launched this tirade against the tabloids. I mean, you don't do that when you're on tour. And also that documentary saying that how pressurized they felt and that they were not happy and they wanted to thrive, not survive. Well, fair enough, but they must make their minds up. I mean, after this is a salutary lesson and this is a warning, and I am sure that this will be taken on board, because it has to be.
Richard, perhaps we should just divide the country up and actually give part to Vladimir Putin and part to Donald Trump. It's just a thought.
What a thought. That is really an interesting idea.
You wouldn't get that on LBC, I can tell you. Or maybe you would. Marriage Story. We're back to the whole notion of an Academy Award-winning filmmaker. That would be Noah Baumbach's incisive and compassionate portrait of a marriage breaking up and a family staying together. And nothing to do with the Windsors. So there we are. Talk to us.
Well, I have to say that this is an absolutely marvellous film. I mean, Noah Baumbach, The Squid and the Whale, and various comedies, satirical comedies featuring Greta Gerwig, I mean, Mistress America, Francis Ha, and so on. I mean, he is one of the most perspicacious and sensitive students of the human condition. Marriage Story is marvellous. Now, this is a movie with real impact. It begins with a couple, Nicole, played by Scarlett Johansson, and Charlie, played by Adam Driver. And you hear each of them say, what's good about the other? And you really get a shock, because they're rehearsing, but they're divorcing. And this becomes tremendously involving, because we feel for both of them. They're involved in a bitter coast-to-coast tug-of-war over the divorce and the custody of their son. Nicole's an actress who's been the star of her husband's theatre company in New York, but she feels that her career's been subsumed, falls out of love, goes to California, and intends to bring up their son Henry, played by Elsie Robinson there. This leaves Charlie in a desperately stressful situation, because his base is in New York. But if he wants access, he's told that he needs a base near Nicole in California. So what happens in this movie, and this is the tremendous dramatic tension that you get, both are drawn against their will into confrontation. Neither wants it, and yet the options open to them in the legal system lead inexorably towards this. And you have some wonderful performances as lawyers. There's Alan Alda's empathetic, aging Bert Spitz. There's Laura Dern's recuperative Sandra, who advises Nicole. And that means that Charlie's got to use Jay, played by Ray Liotta, who's ferocious. So the moment you're sucked in, confrontation is inevitable. And this is an intense and very deeply touching, because what do they each feel for each other? I mean, we don't know how it's going to play out. And the tension under the veneer of politeness is waiting to erupt. I mean, I had no idea. I have to be honest. I hadn't the faintest idea Adam Driver had this emotional range. I mean, the performance he gives to Charlie is just wonderful, because this is someone whose world's fallen apart. And he has to fight for access in a different state, no idea where the future's going to lead. So he conveys his angst so viscerally, yet you can also sympathize with Scarlett Johansson's Nicole, because she wants a new career. She's found a path. She's also got a certain sensitivity, and it helps the legal battles taking place in her own state. She's got a more out of her togetherness than he has, and the characters are convincing, and we share their pain, and you've got the contrast between the vibrance and the bustle of New York and the sunny seductiveness of California so brilliantly. I was mesmerised. It's a wonderfully atmospheric film.
Well, there we have it. Positive thumbs up all round for Marriage Story, but let's test it in the studio. And given that it'll be available on Netflix in December, early December, obviously a Netflix production, it's available in theatres now. Go and watch it on a mobile phone. No, don't start, Richard.
No, I know.
Emily, will you be checking out Marriage Story?
Yes, definitely. I'd actually seen the trailer previously to this, so it is definitely a film that I'd be interested in watching.
Okay, Kira?
I think so, because I like how they've portrayed how marriage can have its weaknesses and break down, and especially with the boy involved as well, it shows a lot.
And the good news, Kira, is you don't have to worry about any kind of negative dissing, to use the vernacular from Richard, about the upcoming Frozen 2, because he doesn't review animated movies, OK?
Oh, that's a shame.
Well, I do try, and I review a few.
Yeah, but it's very rare.
I will have to review it then for next week.
Exactly.
No, but may I be only too delighted to hand that task over to you. I really am grateful. I mean, I say this with some pain, the thought of seeing some of them. I mean, there have been some that have been good.
Mm.
Oh, yes. But I do try and limit, yes.
Richard will see it when it becomes a live-action version, OK?
So. I mean, I don't think I'd ever be able to critique it as well as Richard does.
You have to begin somewhere. You must start with Frozen.
Exactly. Richard, time has mitigated against either the Aeronauts. I know you can't even begin to say the words. It's okay. Or indeed, the Aeronauts Updated, which is basically the Le Mans scenario. Both similar aspects, I think.
I'm sure that next week, because I mean, we really have had a dramatic 24 hours.
Exactly.
We've had a dramatic 4 days. I mean, all of this. This is the extraordinary thing.
That interview with Julie Etchingham between Corbyn and Johnson wasn't as dramatic as we thought it was going to be. I mean, Julie Etchington was quite clearly the hands-down winner. She gets my vote for Prime Minister. Anyway.
Well, I know she seemed in touch.
Yes.
She seemed concise.
Yes.
She brought in the audience.
Everything you'd expect a Prime Minister to be, really, but never mind.
The thing was, parts of that were so terribly boring, and you've also got to admit that they were playing to specific agendas and the messages. I mean, sometimes these prime ministerial debates do have a certain relevance. You remember the I Agree With Nick when Nick Clegg suddenly became a poster boy?
Quality. Absolute quality. It was almost equivalent to Nixon and Kennedy back in the day. I can't even remember that myself.
Nixon and Kennedy, I do remember.
Now, he was sweating, you see. Now, obviously, Prince Andrew would not have had that problem. But there we are.
Nixon, the interesting... You mentioned it's actually historically very interesting because Nixon had been unwell, and it was that reason, and his 6 o'clock shadow.
Yes.
And people watched it, and
he looked shifty and shady.
We know what's going on. Yes, I know, and there's also Eisenhower's vice president. I mean, there's no doubt he was, too. There was plenty of evidence. And subsequently, it came to Watergate. But the interesting aspect of it was that those, and quite a few did, listened to it on the radio, thought Nixon had won.
This is it.
But those who looked and saw the shining bright night,
gave
there was Kennedy.
Exactly.
Swung it. And it was a very close election. So, Chicago, the dead vote very effectively there.
Thank heavens we've actually got the notion of social media these days. Kira, last two questions for Richard, please.
Richard, have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us this morning?
Oh, I certainly have indeed. It's quite extraordinary. I mean, next week's likely to be much more peaceful.
That's good to hear. So you'll definitely be returning next week then?
Oh, I will be returning indeed.
It would be the eve of us meeting up once again in person when a Midweek Drive Vet team comes down to see you with Tessa Snart and myself and others actually in the great city on the 6th of December. Actually, well, is that next week? Yes, it is next week. I know. No, I'm confused.
Is it next week?
No, two weeks' time.
Week
no, it's, you
yeah,
see, the time, it just slips into one sort of gear.
15 days, to be exact.
Thank you.
There you go.
Yeah,
very
exactly. It's a countdown person.
Well, I'm sure Andrew is feeling it. He will over the coming weeks, months.
Yeah, I'm not going to do an interview with him, actually, just in case you're wondering. It's not another option.
Well, I think he will have interviews with certain bodies which have an interest in investigating what he's talking about.
Exactly.
And it's extraordinary. And what is so ironic is that that interview was supposed to put all the questions to bed.
Cod's one up is what you can use in that particular concept. Richard, we salute you. So from the breaking news department, not only will we be joined by Fern McCann at 9 a.m. and then Joanna Cox and various other folk, etc. Kira, you have got something that you want to share with the list of the Madrid Drive Morning Edition because of University of Lincoln students hosting a green-friendly event to improve sustainability. Is that correct?
Yes, that is.
Yay.
I won't go too much into it, but we have our project manager, Ellen Baker, joining us in the studio around 10 to 9. And we'll both be discussing all about the Lincoln Eco Workshop, which will be on the 27th of November.
In about 10 minutes from now, I imagine. Yes. Well, in fact, to be precise, so 8 minutes and 50 seconds. Let's hope that the line to Newcastle is actually working. Ian Lennox, how are you, sir?
I'm fine. I can see the smoke signals coming from Lincoln as I speak.
The smoke signals, which are probably saying, where is Emma Street? Where is Maurizio Pochettino? Why has Tottenham actually moved to have Jose Mourinho, the special one, appointed? Why not Rafa Benitez? Were you surprised by that, Ian? Or is it a case of, well, look, I'm just happy with Steve Bruce that he hasn't been pinched from the lads?
Well, if he can get the sack about seven months after being in the final of the European Champions League. But,
see, that's the kind of standard that obviously Mike Ashley doesn't quite adhere to, isn't it, really, in terms of where you're
going.
Survival
in the first. Yes. Surviving the Premier League is our main aim now.
Well, you know, it does happen, actually. Kira, I'm just wondering, you know Ellen, there seems to be someone wandering around outside looking like a lost soul. Do you want to just double-check that things are there? I'm just sort of thinking,
I didn't realise.
No, exactly. Off you go. Look after your client. Bring her in all sorts of wonderful ways. It's just amazing. Sometimes, Ian, as you might know, if you ever get to Lincoln, you'll see that because of the goldfish area that we actually have in terms of this, we see people passing by, we see people looking lost. Sometimes they look in as though it's some sort of strange, freakish thing that we're doing here, you know, randomly chatting or opening our mouths and communicating with people across the globe, and then sometimes we think it's just a whole new world, really. So there we are. The joy of the media. I suppose you had such things at Tyne's Television, or was it just a case of, nobody looked at us then, it was just a different world entirely.
Oh, I sat well away from the windows.
It's always good. Snipers in Newcastle, obviously. It is Emily Bolton's first show. Emily Bolton, of course, a fine actress who was in Moonraker, amongst other things. But Emily Bolton, from which part of Essex, Emily?
I'm from Benfleet, so nearer to Southend-on-Sea area.
Southend-on-Sea, sorry. Yeah. So we're already breaking into the vernacular from that sort of point of view. And you've made the journey from Southend to Lincoln.
Mm-hmm.
Why?
Good question. When I wanted to go to university, I wanted to go down south originally. And then I actually had a family friend who was up in Lincoln studying at university. I came up, went to the Christmas markets, just really liked it, and then ended up applying for here.
Excellent. This is that simplicity, Ian, that just makes life so much more useful. And Ian, as somebody who's very clearly connected with the notion of ecology, in fact, actually at 9:45 this morning, we're talking to TV presenter and environmentalist Miranda Krestovnikov and sustainability expert Rosanna Ellis about how the UK must kick unnecessary single-use plastic by 2025. 74% of those surveyed in this particular area say more needs to be done in their area for sustainability. And plastic reductions as simple as changing sauce sachets, difficult to say at this time of the morning, I'll say it again, sauce sachets to bottles could actually save up to 4 tonnes of plastic per annum. So interesting stuff. How do you recycle, Ian, or is it a case of...
Yes, I do, yes. I'm one of those people now who become more and more aware of probably the most important question on the planet is saving the environment and protecting ourselves against global warming. So I do my little bit, yes.
Which is very important. Now we're just actually equipping our
I've got more bins in my house and I've got bedrooms.
Well, there is a line I could say there, but I won't for obvious reasons from that point of view. Kira, whom have you actually brought to the studio now to actually welcome the discussion and so on?
Our lovely project manager Ellen Baker with us, and basically she's going to be discussing all about Lincoln Eco Workshop very soon.
Ellen, it's over to you, good self. Talk to us about Lincoln Eco Workshop and how the University of Lincoln students are indeed hosting this green friendly event to improve sustainability and make students more environmentally friendly.
So I'm an event management student in the business school, so we're working, there's about 18 of us.
Yeah.
PR and marketing as well, some sports business management. And for our events assessment module, we have to plan and host a live event. So I came up with the idea of Lincoln Eco Workshop with some help from the colleagues as well. And we just want to kind of raise awareness to the university and to students as well of how they can, like, we cut down on plastic, just generally be more eco-friendly, but in a very student-centred way. So it will be really tailored to students. It is open to public as well, if they're interested. We've got some great guest speakers, if you want me to.
I think we need those, as well as this relaxed competition in which students will be asked to fill as many plastic bottles with recyclable waste within a short time frame.
Eco-bricks competition.
Yes. Yeah, very good. Talk to us about the guests.
So our first guest will be Amanda Goss. She is a master's fashion lecturer here at Lincoln, and she also owns her own company called Sia as well. So she's worked in the fashion industry, for a long time, and she is going to come and talk to us about circular economy, which kind of a little in a nutshell, it's instead of recycling waste or
she reuses.
Yeah, she does.
She?
Yeah, she reuses it. She
She makes stuff like plastic, not plastic, sorry. She uses fabric for paper, newspaper for pencils, all that kind of thing.
Now, just so we can get a bit more interactive here, and Ian can actually sort of contribute to this whole thing without sort of saying, I'm enjoying it. I think we have headphones for all three of you, so if you'd actually just sort of make sure those headphones are actually fitted, you might have to pass yours on or swap them. Okay, that's good, that's fine. Excellent. You've been listening to that, Ian. I mean, I can also add Dr. Martin Elliott White will be appearing. Oliver Lancaster will also be providing talks about carbon footprint, creative thinking, recycling materials. Any thoughts from yourself that you'd like to share, Ian, or indeed questions for Ellen, or indeed Kira?
Well, one of my eldest daughters is a school teacher, and she has been telling me about how she's started a little initiative at her school, getting children to become more and more aware of the importance of the environment. And they've got a little group together, and they're only about 8 or 9 or 10, I think. But some of the ideas they come up with, and some of the thoughts and the seriousness which they've taken to the project, is really encouraging. Because I think if you can get a kids at that sort of age, they'll follow it all their lives. And I think it's just making people more conscious of how important this has become. And unless we do something very, very quickly about the planet, we're going to be in deep, deep trouble.
And Ellen, is this something which, as project manager for this particular experience, the Lincoln Eco Workshop, you take on board in terms of it's not just a case of a one-off event and that's it, it's all over. It's you really looking in terms of how it resonates, how it kind of continues as well.
So Claudia Seymour, our events lecturer, is really, really on board with it. She absolutely loves the idea. And so I don't know if you've heard of like a pre-event. So in terms of a pre-event to our event, we've been offering discounted tickets for if people show us pictures of them recycling, things like that. And then, Claudia is trying to get in contact with the environmental managers at the university to see if we can possibly make it an annual thing.
And it's fair to say that University of Lincoln is, and I just passed by the Vice-Chancellor this very morning, we sort of passed in the revolving door, Ian. No, don't give me any sort of strange puns about that. She was heading for coffee, I believe. But in terms of the sort of system, she's very keen to obviously stress the eco-credentials of Lincoln. I think a lot of universities as well. But is that something, Ellen, from your own point of view that you notice, or do you think, again, we can always improve and do better?
I think we could do a lot better, yeah. So, for example, for the EcoBrick competition, we asked the David Chiddock Atrium Cafe for a big bag of their plastic, because otherwise they just either throw that in the bin or recycle it, but it's actually non-recyclable plastic.
Mm. So they can't recycle it.
Yeah, making the uni aware that we can do something with it.
Yeah. This sounds great. Ian, any questions you want to put to Ellen or Kira about this particular element?
Well, I'll just basically on the same theme. The basic problem is to get people involved, get them to do something, and then to get them to continue doing something throughout their lives. I think it's just raising the conscious level, really, throughout the world, really. It's within our own hands to save ourselves. So that's the only thing I can think of, really.
So keep up the good work, Ellen. That's the important thing. How can people get in touch with yourself, the project, and the event itself from that point of view? Is there a website? Do you use the social media? What are the routes?
There is a website, yeah. That's a Wix website, Lincoln Eco Workshop, and there's links to that on our Facebook, which is UOL Eco, and then our Instagram, which is Eco_UOL.
Splendid. Emily, would you like to put those last two questions to Ian Lennox at this moment, please?
Yes, of course. Ian, have you had an interesting telephonic link with us this morning?
Yes, I have, yes.
Good, that's
and
good
I'll
to
get
hear.
Back to my breakfast.
And will you be joining us again sometime in the near future?
I hope so.
such a relief this time, Ian, to actually not lose half of your communications due to
it. Oh, this one was superb. I'll bear that in mind. It must be the phone itself and that.
Yeah, I mean, this is no messy. I mean, last week, as Kira might recall, it was every word in five, basically. It was just horrendous.
Well, I hope they're good ones.
Well, sage and deeply considered, as we'd expect from a writer and former television producer. It's very important. We'll chat more about these eco events with Ellen and a whole heap of other goodies as the show proceeds after Marmalade. Or maybe not. Marmalade with a Rainbow. And Ellen Baker, Project Manager for Lincoln Eco Workshop, your second year student. Reading. What is your topic?
Again, Lincoln Eco Workshop is a guide to become a more sustainable student. It's an event run by students, mainly for students, just to raise awareness of recycling.
And the subject you're studying at university, Ellen, is?
I'm studying events management.
Events management. I just wanted to clarify that. That's what you're always reading. Great stuff. So, I mean, is this something where, in terms of when you were at school, you thought, I want to do something now? I want to celebrate my inner Greta Thunberg.
even as a kid, like my mum could tell you, I'd go out and I'd organise all the kids in my street to do like a little pick and there's stuff like that, tidying
up. So you worked there. And where is home?
Leeds.
City of Leeds. And what brings you to Lincoln then, apart from the event management degree?
The course was really good, but yeah, apart from that, it's just a really nice city.
Well, there we are. And a relatively green-friendly city to a certain extent.
I think so, yeah.
Lots of other sort of areas to be developed from that point of view. Excellent. In the second hour of the programme, we do have, all being well, Fern McCann talking about procrastination and uncomplicating parental life. You're a big fan of Fern McCann, it would seem, Emily.
Yes, well, I'm from Essex, so I feel like I can...
Really?
I can, yeah, so I can relate.
On that basis. Kira, are you aware of Fern McCann?
No.
You see,
to be quite honest, I've no idea.
That's the nature of celebrity. Fern McCann ever reached Leeds? No. You see, clearly you're going to have to be this advocate.
I was about to say, I watch a lot of The Only Way Is Essex and I'm a celebrity, so...
Mm-hmm. You probably know her.
Yeah.
Oh!
Yeah,
she did a show, didn't she, about her parental life, didn't she, with a kid?
Yeah, first-time mum, yeah.
Yeah.
It's nice to see that we've actually done our research on this. You know, thankfully, these are the sort of things which we won't be talking about when Fern actually joins us after the news. Otherwise, we'll be talking about how British people spend more than a quarter of the year faffing. Yeah, only 3 in 5 Brits actually agree that life is unnecessarily complicated these days, with the average 18 to 34-year-old, that includes you guys, spending as much as 20 minutes just sitting on their bed, staring into space before they get up. Let's just test this. Every day, 20 minutes just sitting on your bed, staring into space before you get up, Emily?
I wouldn't say it's 20, but I'd say for a good 10 minutes, I'd probably think, oh.
Okay, Kira?
I mean, I'd say, like, most days, at least half an hour.
Half an hour. yeah. Ellen?
I'd agree about 10.
Oh, well, so it goes. We'll find out more about that after the wildflowers and the news and more on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition for Siren Radio. Fantastic in the weather today for Lincoln. Highs of 6 degrees centigrade, lows of 5 degrees centigrade, a day of light cloud with a moderate breeze. So, TalkTalk TV found that Brits fritter away almost 4 hours a day doing seemingly unnecessary things. Despite agreeing the faffs of modern life mean they spend less time doing things they really enjoy. We've already done a mini survey in the studio, so let's actually bring on board our general expert on such matters, a new mum, TV personality extraordinaire. It's the fabulous Fern McCann. How are you, Fern?
Hi, good morning, how are you?
Excellent, very good indeed, and hopefully looking to make the very best of every second of our time with you this morning. No faffing about in any way, shape or form, but Fern, would you consider yourself a faffer?
Oh, I am like the ultimate faffer. Mm. Although I am a new mum and I should have my life in check, organised, everything kind of running to a schedule, I do like to faff. I'm a big, big procrastinator. Mm. That's why when I started working with TalkTalk TV, I was like, this is actually perfect for me. It fits in so perfect with my life. I was so surprised that some households have up to 5 remotes in their front room. Like, that just seems mental to me. Like, who's got the time?
5
That's
remotes.
For 5 remotes.
Unbelievable. We did a mini survey in the studio with 3 fine folk, and I think the average about 20 minutes just sitting on the bed, just staring at a wall, just waiting to work that is pretty much a common from this point of view. In fact, we got a huge fan of your good cell phone. By the way, congratulations on the new baby, so great stuff from that point of view.
I feel like to lap it up, I'm still doing a good job.
But we do have another Essex girl who's reading English at the University of Lincoln. It's Emily. Emily, you're a keen fan, I believe, of Fern.
Yes.
Very excited when you said you're on the show.
Hi, Emily.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Yes, I'm from Essex as well, so I'm an avid fan of The Only Way Is Essex and First Time Mum and etc. I'm from Benfleet, near Leigh-on-Sea.
Oh, I know.
Yes.
Cool.
Yes.
Much as we'd like to actually hand over to the Essex girls for the rest of this programme, we need to move on, sort of thing. So, I mean, I think it's fair to say, Emily, you spent about half an hour just staring into space for that sort of point of view, or the 20 minutes, 50, depending on that.
Yeah,
so,
definitely.
So, Fern, in terms of tips to save time, I mean, Emily's in the middle of actually doing a dissertation, juggling time, new commitments to radio stations and Siren Radio and all the rest of the bits and pieces. What would your advice to Emily be, Fern?
Well, I think that's the thing, whether you are studying at university, whether you're a radio host like yourself, whether you're a new mum, everyone is living in the fast lane at the moment. Everyone has got multiple things going on. So I just think you need to get organised the night before. This is like my biggest tip to whoever you are. Just like for me, I just want to find new ways that I can simplify my life. So, like, I'm forever doing laundry, and I've learnt this new thing called the Ninja Fold. You can check out my my YouTube video with Talk Talk. But just little things, just to... I love a voice note as well. See, instead of, like, texting, I feel like that takes a lot of time. Just jump on the voice note.
I completely agree with that. When I text my friends, I'm always sending voice notes, especially if it's a long message.
Wow.
Definitely.
I'm just stuck at the Ninja Folding. I mean, this is a world of things on that basis.
You need to get on it.
Clearly. I'm just so out of it these days, Fern. I just don't want to go there. Kira, any thoughts from yourself about...
I'm like the biggest procrastinator, I think.
Half an hour, I think you were saying.
Half an hour. It could be an hour. Sometimes I just sit there and I'm just like contemplating my own life. I'm like, what am I doing?
I know. You can waste hours, can't you? Just like scrolling through Instagram or just kind of... Do you know what? I spend a lot more time searching for something to watch than actually watching something on TV.
I do that, especially on Netflix. Yeah. I've got like a list now. I'll just like scroll through it and I'll be like, I don't want to watch any of this. I'll watch this instead. And it just takes ages.
Fern, we discovered a few weeks ago that actually the average amount of the length that we actually scroll per year is about 44 miles worth of scrolling, just actually scrolling through things. So 44 miles, which
again, scary, isn't it?
That's a little bit worrying. I mean, Ellen Baker here is in the studio talking about Lincoln Eco Workshop. Ellen, any thoughts or questions or lines you'd like to use in terms of tips that could be eco-friendly to save time? No.
That's a struggle. I mean, personally, I find myself like researching zero waste, and that's my excuse for procrastinating.
So it's the research line, Fern. Is that a sort of commonality within students that actually, if it's researching, it's not a waste of time, it's research?
Yeah, put it down to research. That's what I'm going to say next time. I'm going to use that as my excuse.
I mean, were you surprised by the research at all, Fern, in terms of the sort of message that's there? Or is it a case of, I mean, literally, if you are looking at that TV devices, etc., you're looking at spending 13 days a year, 2.8 years across an average 80-year lifetime, just actually finding the right TV remote?
I was so shocked by the research. And that's why I was like, do you know what? This is going to fit perfect with my lifestyle. Everything you need in one with TalkTalk TV and one remote. Like, I can't tell you how many times I've had, like, multiple remotes searching for it. It's the bane of my life. So this is just kind of ideal. But, yeah, the research is mental, isn't it?
Well, it opens up a whole range of things. Where, Fern, can people go to find out further information about this survey and even more time-saving tips, apart from your YouTube channel, obviously?
So check out the YouTube video that I've done with TalkTalk TV, or simply search TalkTalk TV and Fibre.
Well, that makes perfect sense. And Emily, any other questions you'd like to put to Fern at this stage? Because obviously I know the excitement. I mean, she came to the studio, she bounded into the studio. So she's still this amazing. It's just wonderful.
Yes, I do have one question I'm dying to know. Are you watching I'm a Celebrity? And if you are, I know it's early doors, but is there any favourites of yours that you're hoping could make it to the end?
Of course I am watching I'm a Celeb. It's the highlight of coming towards the end of the year. I absolutely love sitting down and watching it, especially that I did it 4 years ago. That's like a little running joke with me and my friends. I'm like, oh, did I ever tell you that I actually was on I'm a Celeb once?
Yeah, anyway, nice. Just dropped
I'm
in there.
I'm loving this series. Of course, like, I feel like I tuned in just to see Caitlyn Jenner.
I'm the exact same.
I think she's doing amazing. I think Roman Kemp is fantastic.
Yeah.
Obviously, we've got some latecomers in that I think we'll see tonight doing the trial. But, yeah, I think it's a wicked series. But do you know who I really like? I absolutely love Kate Garraway.
So do I. Like, yeah, she's one of my favourites.
Yeah, she's brilliant. I feel like you do need someone from a journalist background that's going to ask them questions we all want to know.
Yeah.
Sitting on our sofa like, yes, Nadine, like, do you talk to the rest of girls aloud? Like, it's them questions and burning questions that we want to know. But, yeah, it's got off to a really good start and I can't wait to see what's going to happen in the rest of the series.
So no thoughts about Ian Wright actually taking Harry Redknapp's crown, perhaps?
Oh, no. I mean, I like Ian, but I don't think he's going to make it.
No.
He's crumbling on the first hurdle. Listen, it's the hunger that gets you. It's the boredom. And I say it every year. It's the... I hate to generalise and say it, but it's the footballers, because there always seems to be one. It's the footballers that struggle.
Well,
and I don't know why. I think when you're in there, you've got to get stuck in to every single task, every single job, just, you know, helping out around the camp, because if you don't, you will get so bored, and it will. It's a mental game, and unfortunately, it's got to Ian, so it seems.
Well, maybe, as I say, looking ahead next year, I mean, you could probably put this through the system for maybe Prince Andrew could actually go in there, just a thought, you know, might help his PR. You know, he wouldn't sweat anyway, but still. Let's move away from that. Fern, two final questions.
I can see him eating kangaroo testicles and all of that.
Now you've sown that seed, Fern. I don't think there's any coming back now. It's just stepped away on that. Fern, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on Siren Radio today? Has it been okay for you?
Thank you so much. I've loved it. Thank you.
This is good. And therefore, can we prevail upon you to return in the near future? Will you come back sometime?
Let's do it. 2020. I'll put it in my diary.
Round of applause for Fern McCann, please.
Yay!
Everyone is going through changes. And knows what's going on, and everybody changes places, but the world still carries on. Love must always change to sorrow, and everyone must play the game. It's here today and gone tomorrow, but the world goes on the same.
Christmas 2019, clearly the season of gifts, etc. Well, giving alcohol can be seen as politically incorrect. Sugar, of course, is the new nicotine. There could be all sorts of challenges with respect to selecting the right gift for the right receiver and so on. However, help is at hand with a top 10 question list, which have been put together by the fantastic work of a whole range of psychologists and indeed research by TK Maxx. And to actually address this and talk us through the steps to take to ensure that getting a right gift for the right person is not necessarily going to be as stressful this year as in previous years, we're delighted to welcome ace behavioural expert. It's the fabulous Jez Rose. How are you, Jez?
Hey, what a lovely introduction. I'm very well, even more very well now, thanks, Alex.
Well, that's marvellous. Now, this research, as we say, by TK Maxx, that suggests that a third of British folk have repeatedly purchased the same gift five Christmases in a row. What's wrong with handkerchiefs and socks? For goodness sakes.
Well, I'm very, very pleased that, as far as I'm aware, I'm not on your Christmas list, because... Let me tell you what is wrong with handkerchiefs and socks.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's amazing, isn't it? You know, this is the interesting thing that this research has revealed. One in ten of us buy those, what the researchers are calling safe gifts. You know, buy the same thing, like 20 handkerchiefs, and give them to 20 different people, just because of this autopilot that we seem to be on. Mm. And I am on this mission today to encourage people to switch off that autopilot and start to gift differently, so that we can really, I suppose, get under the skin of what it is that makes giving and receiving gifts at Christmas really, really powerful. And I think, to a degree, I think we might have lost a little bit of that magic spark with that, you know, Alex.
The spirit of Christmas, perhaps. Now, as we said, the psychologists working on this actually use techniques used by detectives, mediators and doctors to actually get these top revealing questions to actually ask yourself in many ways to actually determine what's the best way forward. In terms of the research that went into this, did you sort of think, yes, it needed to be done, because at the end of the day, we've moved on from a Christmas carol?
Yeah, I think so a little bit. I mean, the point of these 10 questions is, you know, they're huge fun. If you've been through them yourself, you'll know exactly how revealing some of the answers are. And they're designed to broaden and challenge the way that we think about the answers. And also, I guess, to sort of enhance our creativity with them a little bit as well, so that we sort of surprise ourselves with answers that we didn't know were really there. I wasn't really that surprised. I'm extremely grateful for it, I have to say, because it's changed the way I'm going to gift this Christmas, that's for sure. But look, we're very busy. I think a lot of us feel a little bit of pressure and stress at work. You know, technology and the advances of technology are encouraging us to respond quicker than perhaps we, you know, innately and instinctively do as human beings. And the result of that is this autopilot. Is this, you know what, I'm a bit busy, I'm stressed, I'm, you know, there's that stupid Christmas song that's been going on and on and on again, and I'm walking around and there's lights and it's busy, I'll just grab the nearest thing that seems right at the time. And that's not our fault at all, but you can see how very quickly some of those awkward, embarrassing gifts where you've got to pretend that, you know, you really love another handkerchief and another pair of socks, you can see how that sort of situation develops, you know?
Maybe it's just a case of the old Buddhist saying, where there is choice, there is misery.
Yes, absolutely. It's exactly that.
Let's just look at some of these questions. Number one, of course, imagine you have 24 hours to do anything you want. The sky's the limit. What would you do? I don't know. There's too much choice. I mean, I mean, is that one for billionaires, perhaps? Or
no,
is it?
No, absolutely not. That's the point. It's blue sky thinking, isn't it? You know, literally anything. What would you do? Forget about, because it's not about gifting that thing. You know, it's not somebody saying, oh, you know what, I'd go on holiday for a year on a yacht. You know, you don't say that to your grandma, and she's there worrying, thinking, well, how am I going to buy a yacht? You know, it's not about the yacht, is it? It's about the sorts of things that people are interested in and engage with. And that will help you then decide when you go into your local store, what is it that sort of is broadly like that? I think that's what's really interesting about these questions. Here's one for you, Alex. What's something people assume you like, but you secretly don't?
Oh, interesting. Yes, that whole sort of... yes.
Because those are the sorts of questions, the sort of answer you probably wouldn't know, right? And if the right person asks you it, I think probably the answer is handkerchiefs and socks, isn't it?
Well, I mean, this is... You've just read my mind, you know, particularly the novelty ones. I'm a great girl for that. It's a wonderful thing. You know, there's so much use you can get out of them from that point of
absolutely.
View.
Yes, absolutely.
Again, finish the sentence, I'm the world's unknown expert in... That's quite an interesting one, because you want to sort of find something which fits the person's interests, so that, you know, people have to go away from faux politeness and say, yes, this is really good.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, this research is helping us understand better that individuals, when we give something to them, a lot of the time our interaction with that person ends there. But actually, one of the things that this is helping us to do is think about what is their use for that gift? What are they likely to do with it when I've given it to them, they've unwrapped it, and I've gone home? And also, what's the experience they're likely to have with that gift? Because that, of course, reduces some of the waste as well. I mean, one of the things that came out of this research is that we spend £19 billion annually on presents. So I think there's possibly an undersort of current here, in that there's an interesting subtext that we should think perhaps a little more carefully about what we're giving to make sure that it does land well, it is going to be used, and that ultimately is going to enhance somebody's experience of the giving and the receiving of gifts.
And of course, there is that other classic line of simply having book tokens or gift vouchers and so on, which is another area which is open to a whole range of sort of opportunities. So people say, I can't decide, you decide for yourself from that point of view.
Yes, absolutely. And I suppose that's where, you know, a bit of fun. These will be great in an office or even maybe as a, you know, add them into your sort of pre-Christmas quiz or something. If you've got some family round or some friends round, maybe chuck in, use these 10 questions to help people get a much better and more loved gift this Christmas.
Yes, we should be trying it with the midweek drivettes on both the morning edition and evening slots from this point of view. I mean, clearly, what's the one thing you could watch or read about forever and never get bored of? Well, any writing by Jez Rose, obviously.
Very
classic
kind.
Than that. When was the last time someone did something thoughtful for you? What's the best gift you've ever received or you've ever given someone other than me?
Yes.
And finally, share what you're looking forward to most next year. It almost takes me back to a certain political debate between two leaders, really, in which one actually said, I'll give you a copy of A Christmas Carol, and the other one said, I'll give you something else. And this is a dams and jam, I think, was settled on. And then they were in dams and jam. Anyway, we're not going to go political. And if you are following the general election, you know exactly what I'm referring to. my choice for winner, Julie Exingham. She wins every time, really. Still. Or possibly yourself, Jez. Maybe a joint partnership. Maybe you should actually stand as an independent.
Well, maybe I could, with all the spare time I've got.
Well, Jez, where can people go to find out further information about this TK Maxx survey and indeed findings?
Well, find the 10 questions at tkmaxx.com, or of course, you know, search for TK Maxx on any of your social, TK Maxx UK, Instagram, TK Maxx _UK at Twitter, but find the 10 questions at tkmaxx.com.
I will add Premier and Ace Behavioural Expert to your initial title, Jez, because you are both Premier and Ace. From that point of view, Jez Rose, we salute you, and happy holidays.
You are a joy and a wonder. Happy Christmas, Alex. Have a great day.
Still think it's too soon to really start using the C word. Never mind. We'll put the question to Ellen, as it's her first show on this particular area. Name something people assume you like, but you secretly don't. element. Something that people assume that you like, but you secretly don't.
Assume that I like, but I secretly don't.
That's a tricky question. It is.
Under pressure.
They're all tricky questions. Again, the other one we're looking for, if you finish this sentence, I'm the world's unknown expert in... I'm the world's unknown expert in... They are tough, aren't they?
I've still not got a clue. Maybe
there's amazing stuff. Kira, you wanted to mention a couple of things about how people can get tickets for this grand event and so on.
Yes, so...
this is Lincoln Eco Workshop.
Yes, it is Lincoln Eco Workshop.
What grand event?
So it's on the 27th of November next week on Lincoln's amazing campus in the Minerva building in MB3202, and we'll post more information about that on our socials soon and on our website. But to purchase tickets, they're £5, and with each ticket that you purchase, you get a free raffle ticket, and our raffle prizes are amazing, completely sustainable, and you can get a ticket if you go on to www.eventbrite.com /Eco Lincoln Workshop.
Excellent. And in case you're looking for the location, Minerva Building, 3202, that's the third floor, room 202. So I know technically in the Minerva Building it says use the stairs, but I think they're probably...
Use the lift.
Or abseil down the side and up again. So it's a way forward. Anything else you want to mention about this event, Kira, or indeed Ellen?
Yes. So unless if Ellen wants to say it.
Yeah, just about... So we're event students, and what we get out of this is a grade for our assessment. None of the profits go to us. They actually go half to Lincoln's Eco Society and half to the Friends of the Earth Trust as well.
That makes perfect sense. And you know where you heard it first. A reminder of the social media channels that you can find this project
yeah,
on.
Yes, so our Facebook, if you do at Eco, or you can just type in Lincoln Eco Workshop and it'll come up. And as for our Instagram, it's Eco_UOL.
That's all we needed to know. Zulu, too good to be forgotten. Ooh, say the same about William Sitwell. But then again, we're not sure he will be with us or not. He may be, fingers crossed. We'll try and reach him in the very near future. We have got Head of Policy at the Institute of Engineering and Technology, Joanna Cox, joining us. And as mentioned, Miranda Krestolnikov will be talking about sustainability, environment, etc. Ellen is leaving us. You don't have to, Ellen, but if you have to go, you go. She's got to go. She's got to go. That's all right. Well, there we are. A project manager for Lincoln Eco Workshop, there, heading off into the wild blue sustainable future, which is great material from that point of view. Okay, as we said, William Sitwell, a fine correspondent and writer, also back on Bake Off, which is great, the Great British Bake Off and so on, as identified by a whole range of things. And he actually came up with the line this weekend in his column in the Telegraph: a mouthful of pasta took me to some rural Italian idyll, a steaming plate plonked on a farmhouse table. Hey ho.
Bye. range of issues with respect to, obviously, gender balance when it comes to issues relating to STEM subjects and others. But it still seems that there are challenges there, with one in two UK engineering and technology firms being concerned that a shortage of engineers in the UK is a threat to their business. Again, this is not necessarily gender-specific, but young people apparently lack the workplace skills required by industry, which is a challenge. And the best person to obviously talk about this is surely the head of policy at the Institute of Engineering and Technology. That's the wonderful Joanna Cox. How are you, Joanna?
Hi, thank you. How are you?
Good, very good indeed. Now, Joanna, this particular report, which was released today by the Institute of Engineering and Technology, it doesn't really make good reading. And we still seem to be revisiting this whole thing about we've got a skills gap in the market.
Well, the really positive news is that engineering and technology is a really growing industry with the potential for lots of great, well-paid jobs. But what is depressing is that despite all this potential, people are still not getting the skills and education that they need in order to access those jobs.
I mean, the government obviously keen to trumpet the new T-level courses developed in collaboration with employers and businesses, which are designed to prepare post-GCSE students for the world of work. But even then, you've got a bit of a gap, because only 28%, that's just over a quarter of employers, are actually aware that the courses require students to have an industrial placement. So it does seem as though we're lacking in some of the joined-up thinking here, perhaps.
Yes, we really need to make sure that the government and industry work together. We're calling today on industry to be much more activists in the system, to be like activist investors in the system. They need it for their business objectives. We know that 60% of engineering and technology companies tell us that a lack of skills is the biggest barrier to them achieving their business objectives. Considering that barrier, they need to be much more activists in the system and engage with it, engage with apprenticeships and T-levels and other initiatives that are coming through to make sure that they're training the next generation of talent.
Is it a case of people effectively still having a fear about the sciences? I mean, I started off the piece by talking about gender balance and such. I mean, are we addressing those kind of issues in terms of women in engineering and people actually seeing engineering and technology subjects as worthwhile and viable as opposed to doing something more in the humanities, shall we say?
Engineering and technology is for everybody. It's for girls, it's for boys, it's for those from different ethnic backgrounds. Engineering and technology provides great careers for all sorts of people. And that's what we really want to highlight and make sure that people know the opportunities that are out there. What we need to be doing in schools is giving people better careers advice to make sure that they know those jobs are out there for them.
And a few years ago, we were talking about the notion of the concept of a job for life. It's all gone. You need to put career portfolios together and so on. Is that the case in engineering, or is it a case of, well, don't worry, the robots won't replace the engineers yet?
Lifelong learning is important across all industries with digital tech, and climate change is going to bring a lot of different technologies through. So young people have to be adaptable and have skills which can allow them to adapt over their lifetimes. Older people need specific retraining in order to allow them to access those new jobs that are coming through in those new industries.
Again, probably from the glasses half full perspective, I see that nearly a third of firms actually have engineering or technical apprentices already in place, and those firms actually have an average of between 2 and 3 apprentices each. So that apprentice route, with obviously the notion of the apprenticeship levy that comes into play, is actually sort of beginning to penetrate the area.
Yes, so we find that when companies do take apprentices, they find it really positive for their business, and they find a lot more employee engagement and get that long-term employee engagement in their business.
So overall, Joanna, is the prognosis good for future engineers and indeed the state of the country? I mean, we're right in the middle of obviously a major election period, which we clearly can't talk about. But in terms of that, do you think that overall that we're well-placed, or is there always more to do?
There's still quite a bit more to do, as I say, particularly with businesses. We're really calling on businesses to be much more activists in the system. So rather than simply being the recipients of the skills and education system, they need to be telling educationalists what exactly that they need, adapting the content of courses and giving opportunities for young people.
And if folk are listening to this either at university or indeed as prospective apprentices themselves or have family connections with people who are looking to work in engineering, where would you actually point them, Joanna? Where would you say is the best place to go to find out further information?
They can go to their FE college. They can also go for the Institute of Apprenticeships. They've got a website which is a find an apprenticeship, which they can look for the opportunities in their local area.
And are you seeing improvements, Joanna? I mean, in your time as head of policy, is it a case of, yeah, things are getting better, we will be positive, or is it a case of, no, we're all doomed?
It's not that we're all doomed, but we have a great growing industry here which needs more people coming into it. Unfortunately, we haven't made a lot of impact on the shortage of engineers and technologists, but this is because we're a growing industry that needs more people coming into it for those great jobs.
And allowing for the fact that when it comes to climate change, green issues and so on, that maybe the line technology perhaps got us into this mess, maybe technology can get us out of it. Perhaps that's even more of a reason why people should be considering engineering technology as a career choice.
Well, I'm always very technology positive. I see that we can use human ingenuity to solve issues like climate change, and that's what we're concentrating on at the IET.
Joanna, it's been a delight as ever. Joanna Cox, Head of Policy at the Institution of Engineering and Technology. Many thanks indeed.
Thank you.
strong words even in the 21st century, and certainly in the 20th century, which is where that came from. In the 80s, the Kane Gang, and Respect Yourself. It's the Midweek Drive Morning Edition on Siren Radio, where the time is over 20 minutes to 10 o'clock, 9:40 and 17 seconds. And still to come, we've got Miranda Krestovnikov, TV presenter and environmentalist, and sustainability expert from Whitbread, Rosanna Elias, will be talking with us. Thanks to Joanna Cox and, of course, Jez Rose. Sadly, William Sitwell not available today. Never mind. We'll have to rearrange and reschedule and get something sorted out from that point of view. And still in the studio, we've got Kira Olsbrook.
Hello.
And we have, of course, Emily Boston, who's almost made it through 4 hours of these shows so far.
Hello, yes.
Oh, exactly, it's all good. So, in terms of sustainability, are you one of the people, Emily, who would say that more needs to be done in Essex for sustainability?
100%, especially with where I live, Southend-on-Sea and all those areas by the beaches. The amount of rubbish and litter that you see is awful. And when it comes to summertime and people are there having picnics and out on the beach, it all washes up in the sea. It's awful. And it definitely more needs to be done, I'd say.
Mm. Would you stop using products or services from a company with a poor sustainability record?
That is a very good question, because I'd say I probably fall guilty to that, because realistically, all the products I use at the moment, I wouldn't say that I'd know whether the actual packaging or anything is sustainable or not. I don't think that's anything I actually look out for, but I definitely think it's something I probably should.
What about yourself, Kira? Would you be impacted on a company with a poor sustainability record? Would you say, no, I'm not going to use products or services
See, that's a tricky one. I'm the same with Emily, really. Like, I think that I would still use the products, depending on, you know, how good they were and everything. But at the same time, I think companies need to make their packaging more obvious if it's recyclable, and if it is, like, you know, is it plastic, paper, you know, all those kind of components.
We'll take this to the listener and to Miranda Krestovnikov and Rosanna Elias and possibly even others in a matter of moments after we do a reprise of last night's Tessa's Top Tune by Lisa Redford, of course. I Just Can't Forget.
Sadly, I won't let them go. Words and pictures, they surround me, and I'm lying here alone, thinking of the tender moments ever since the night we met. All the times you can't forget. I've been staring out the window, watching time pass me by. See the blackbird in the oak tree, makes me wish I could fly.
I know, we can't forget. Well, we've managed to contact William Sitwell after a fashion, but we'll be with him in a few moments' time from now. Meanwhile, our sustainability experts are providing us with one or two mini challenges insofar as the telephone line seems to be engaged. It's obviously such a vital and important hot topic that we're just not quite sure where to go with this. Can we actually fit them in over the next 900 seconds? Well, we're going to do our very best to do so because, frankly, well, we deserve no less, really. I mean, it is Siren Radio. It's addressing the whole sort of essence of what it's all about, or as we'd like to occasionally just say. So we spoke earlier, of course, with what the University of Lincoln students are actually doing in terms of Ellen Baker and, of course, Kira, who's still with us, about the environment and so on. We're now delighted to welcome TV presenter and environmentalist, the wonderful, extraordinary Miranda Krestovnikoff to the programme. Good morning, Miranda. How are you, Miranda?
Good morning, Alex. I'm really well. How are you?
Excellent. And, of course, sustainability expert from Whitbread, Rosanna Elias. How are you, Rosanna? Excellent. Miranda, talk to us about this, because we've done a little survey in the studio. It seems that whereas both Kira and Emily are both keen to actually do more for sustainability, they're not sure whether they'd stop using products or services from a company with a poor sustainability record.
Really? Oh, that surprises me. I mean, I think myself, if I knew that a company had a good record in sustainability and there was a choice, I would definitely, you know, vote with my feet and go in that direction. It's like if you know, supermarkets announce that it's reducing its packaging or reducing its waste. Wouldn't you go to that supermarket? I definitely would.
Emily, your challenge now.
Yeah. I think also I've got children, and so they're constantly nagging me about single-use plastics and do we need to, you know, buy that packaging? Do we need to do that? And so I'm thinking about it all day, every day. Even if it's not in my mind, it's definitely in their mind, and they're nagging me. So I think more and more of us are just becoming engaged with this as well. You know, we're seeing images on the television of turtles trying to eat plastic bags and animals getting entangled in plastic in the oceans. And this is becoming a very everyday issue. And so I think it's something that does affect us all. It really does. So I'm a bit surprised by your vote in the office. But
I know. Emily.
So, yeah, I think I'm really good in some aspects. So at university in the house, all of the girls I live with, we all recycle. We're really good with that. With plastic bags, we're really good with using Bag for Life. So we've got reusable bags that we always take food shopping with us. I think it's more in the aspect of, it might sound silly, but products that I use, and Kira might agree, products that I use, I don't actually know whether the packaging to it would be sustainable or not. So I think it's more about just doing more research
knowledge
to know. Yeah.
But clearly, with respect to Whitbread, you can actually address that whole system. So Rosanna, talk to us in terms of how, from your own point of view, you've been working to ensure less plastic usage within Whitbread's hotels and restaurants.
Well, we've been working on this for a little while. So last year we announced that we'd had got rid of 10 million plastic straws from our business, which actually, if you think about the size and scale of us, it equates to about 4 tonnes of single-use plastic that we can just get rid of quite quickly. We've also removed all of our single-use plastic cutlery and cups. We've never used those miniature bathroom one-off shampoo bottles. But what we're doing today, and we're really excited to announce today, actually, is our new target to eliminate single-use plastic by 2025. And what that's really going to start looking at is taking a bit of a forensic interrogation and look into our supply chain. It's really the behind-the-scenes plastic. So if you think about, again, the size and scale of us, we've got over 30,000 team members in all of our sites. They need their uniform. We've got 250,000 items of uniform that we buy a year, and each of those at the moment are coming individually wrapped in plastic. That's something that we just need to get rid of, so that's what we're working to do. We're running a trial at the moment on our chef's whites, so that's about 16,000 chef's whites uniforms, which is 2 tonnes of single-use plastic that we're hoping will be eliminated in the next few weeks.
And Kira, is that likely to make you say, yes, Whitbread, I will support them from that point of view, because it's good?
No, yeah, I definitely do support...
We're nudging them in the right direction, which is the important thing. Sauce sachets, probably one of the most challenging things I've actually said for many a time, sauce sachets. But sauce sachets, nappy bags, textile packaging, they're all items, effectively, Miranda, that could all be facing the chopping block as we look to reach this target of 2025.
Absolutely, but this is unnecessary single-use plastic, and I think that's the target sort of message today, is actually, do we need HP sauce in a sauce sachet? We don't. You know, just have it in a bottle that's refillable. Mm. All these things. There are so many decisions, so many choices that each or one of us can make in our everyday life, and I think we've just become lazy. These things have just become part of our everyday life, and we don't even think about them. So I like the challenge now of actually, yes, do we really need to use these things? And actually, here's an option. Here's a hotel chain that are pledging to get rid of all of this unnecessary single-use plastic. So why not support that? And I find that quite exciting, really.
Absolutely.
The
notion of 13 Olympic-sized swimming pools of plastic can be changed just by removing the plastic wrapping from staff uniforms. It's outstanding and wonderful. Where can people go, Miranda, to find out further details about what we've been sharing with the listener this morning? Where's the best place to point them?
Well, premierinn.com website will give you all the details of this announcement, which is great. Also, if people want to find out more about eliminating single-use plastic, there are loads and loads of different websites, loads of different, especially marine conservation organisations, that will give you advice about just eliminating or trying to reduce the use of single-use plastic in your home as well. And as I said, if you've got kids, they'll be telling you anyway.
Clearly. Well, Miranda Krestovnikov, TV presenter extraordinaire, I think, and environmentalist. Yay! Fantastic stuff. And Rosanna Ali, sustainability expert. Many thanks indeed. We salute you, ladies, and hopefully we'll speak again very soon.
Thank you very much, Alex.
Many thanks. Take care now.
You're listening to Siren 107.3. Good morning. Time now on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition for culinary class and gastronomic gorgeousness with the broadcasting legend, who is William Sitwell.
Yay, you go, Rachel. Quite right too. William, welcome back to the Midweek Drive Morning Edition. It's been too long, sir. Far, far, far too long.
I've been bereft. I don't know how I've got through the day.
No, it has been traumatic, I must admit. We're going to have to put this right and have a whole batch during the course of the year, because, of course, when we last spoke, we could still refer to your weekly Telegraph columns with William Weighs In, but it's all changed. Still the William Sitwell columns, they're still fantastic. Great material. We already quoted from A Mouthful of Pasta Took Me to Some Rural Italian Idyll, A Steaming Plate Clonked on a Farmhouse Table, but no William Weighs In.
Yeah, well, it's now called Sitwell Stirs It Up, isn't it?
Yeah, it's which is why I thought I'd give you some Kid Creole and the Coconuts. Katie Grimerson, Lord bless her, in Birmingham, was very excited to say, William's on MasterChef. It's great. She gets very excited about these things, but how's it going from the point of view of yourself this season?
Well, you know, this week, actually, I've gone vegan, and it's for a piece I'm writing in the Telegraph, so it's quite interesting. I've cut out all meat and dairy. I'm a plant lover of plant-based food, and I'm seeing how I get on. I'm doing a week, although I should probably do a month, really, for the full effect.
Well, this is very impressive. I mean, I was going to say that the opening line of Dramatic News in Barnes, bong, a new restaurant has opened, bong, it's called Church Road, bong, it is, continues the press blurb, the brainchild of seasoned restaurateurs Rebecca Mascarenas and Phil Howard, bong, anybody can actually use 7 bongs in your opening paragraph. That is what English graduates, Emily, really need to work on, really.
Yeah, that is impressive.
Put more bongs into your aspects. Just superb.
It's a good way of getting the word count up.
I'll use that advice for my dissertation.
Maybe not.
You should. I'm now beginning my dissertation bong. Because journalism is just about the word count. It's all about the word count. You've just got to get the word count up. So, the easier route to the word count, the better.
Do you know, that's probably one of the reasons why in a few years' time it'll be Prime Minister William Sitwell. I just put it out there. Or already we'll make him editor of the Wonderful Spectator, and it'll move on from there. Let's not talk about such things. Kieran, you were saying that you find it difficult with respect to food programmes because you just find your salivary glands just start going. Is that right?
Yeah, I can't. Well, I love watching them. Like, me and Emily were talking about Bake Off. And how basically it's an amazing show.
I still think it should be William Sitwell's Bake Off, personally.
He's very good at it.
I think, yeah.
But I can't watch it. It's just the fact that you see all these delicious cakes and biscuits and you just want to go into your kitchen. And
William, very quickly, how can you help assuage Kira's problem there with being unable to watch the series because there's so much goodness on there?
Well, Kira just needs to get baking herself.
Yeah.
You need to sate yourself in reality. And then you can watch these things and just learn from them and go, oh, that looks nice, but I can eat my own cake. So
this is
point is, you're supposed to get inspired, but actually, I remember I used to edit a magazine called Waitrose Food, and we did a survey years ago that actually showed that only 5% of people in this country cook as a direct result of watching food programs. And so all these people are watching food programs, but not actually doing anything about it. So I think the campaign to actually cook what you watch should begin here on the mid-morning drive show.
Exactly. This is the hurt. In fact, we should relaunch that Bake Off. We'll put it together. William, it's a lot shorter than normal because we've got to go up to the news at 10 o'clock and then we're out of here, etc. But have you had a reasonably interesting, albeit very brief, return to the Midweek Drive Morning Edition?
What news?
Lord of
what? Why, what's happening in Lincoln?
It's just everything is happening in Lincoln. I wish I could say that, but sometimes the arrangements we have with Sky News and their people would speak to our people, and Lord above it be all there. Will you return for a slightly longer version of Sitwell in Full Force, which is another sort of line we could actually sort of use, although I do like the Daily Telegraph sort of edition, which is where we're sort of getting this Saturday. Sitwell Stirs It Up.
Yeah, and we can cook what we watch. We can continue that campaign next week.
Do you know, that's exactly right. We say thank you to Gabriella Peralta, Richard Fitzwilliams, great news on the Prince Andrew interview, unbelievable, Ian Lennox, Fern McCann, of course, Joanna Cox, more Miranda Krestosnikov, I can't even say the word, it's like sauce sachets, etc. Miranda Krestosnikov, I'll get there in the end.
You got it.
And indeed, William Sitwell, thank you, Kira, and thank you to Ellen for her earlier sustainability piece, and to your good self, Emily. That's pretty much it. We're out of here. William, would you like to say farewell to the citizens of Lincoln before we go up to the news from the Sky News Centre? It's over to you, sir.
Yeah, good morning, Lincoln, and here is the news.
Brilliant. It's that Churchillian. Churchillian.
FM. Online.